Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Take two.
Back by popular demand. If anybody was listening before live, and if you're not, if you're catching this as a recording, we had a little bit of snafu. We always say this is live radio. I, from day one, wanted it to be live radio. Sometimes we are riding the high trapeze without a net, and today was one of them. We had a crash in the camera.
That's right.
But we are back. Camera and audio.
Act two, take two.
Act two, take two.
And what we said before in the earlier version, that I finally got an acronym now to describe old people.
Set the stage, though. 4 years ago when we started the show, we got into this sort of rhythm for the first few shows. And I think I remember exactly who it was that basically we stopped us, kind of. Is every show we would say, okay, so baby boomers is the focus of the show.
Right. Aging.
Aging is the focus of the show. And so baby boomers were hippies.
We started life idealistic, save the world, hippies, right?
And then they became yuppies.
All about us, greed is good.
This is good, actually. I like this dynamic between you and I today.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this show tried to take on what the next definition was. What was the word that would define, because the ideal, the situation that we find ourselves in, and the truth is that aging has now become something that is completely undefinable. It is in a good and a bad way. In a bad way, in that it basically we don't have this sort of, you know, boilerplate, neat package of how to deal with things.
And we have no template. We're going to be the longest lived generation
right.
in history.
Well, from in terms of aging, how long they're aging, the health conditions, the problems of health are different.
Yeah.
You know, stress levels, et cetera, so forth, so on. Financially, savings, do you have enough set aside or not?
And more than ever, baby boomers like me, we've talked about this many times, are pissed off and scared.
Okay, so
I never found myself either one of those.
Don't give it away yet. Right. So the point of it is this. That's the bad side of it. The good side of it is we're not restricted by anything.
That's true.
You know, your creativity is your only limitation of how we deal with the aging. However, as a society in general, especially when we are facing an overwhelming tsunami of something like aging, that is, you know, 10,000 people turning 68.
The silver tsunami, as it's been called.
Yeah, 10,000 people turning 68 or 69 a day, okay? This has been going on. These are people that are going to be around for another 20, 30 years. Everything. I saw an article today about the aging in a work environment where, you know, majority of people now basically reporting to 32-year-olds or 30-year-olds as in management positions. And our companies really utilizing
and we're not retiring
that brain power that basically comes with experience. In any case, that being said, the word was something that basically evaded us. We tried show after show. We asked guest after guest, what is this word that we are looking for? That is the follow-up to hippie and yuppie.
Right.
And we could not figure it out. And I remember exactly when we stopped doing it. We had a guest on the show, and I believe it was the lady who was the head of the National Aging Place Council, Ellen, and we basically asked her, this is the question that we were being very flippantly asking every guest, like, oh, let's put it in, what's your contribution to this question?
Right.
And she said, well, why do I have to have a title? I am Ellen. Yeah. That was how she defined herself
and
in this point
that.
In life.
Yeah.
I did. I liked the fact that it was basically about individuality. Mm-hmm. And we stopped doing this. However, I walked in here today, and Paul's all excited. He's all a flutter. And Mr.
Came
Paul,
up at the term.
And Mr. Paul Roberts being a flutter is a scary thing, and let me tell you.
Yes.
Right? Thank God there is a space between me and him. So, Mr. Roberts, would you impart your wisdom to our audience? What is the word that follows?
That captures the essence of who we are.
Hippie to yuppie to?
Well, let me do it again. I'll do it my way. So we were hippie. We were idealistic. We were going to save the world. We were young.
He's a baby boomer. He's
then we became...
His way, of course.
We families and career people, and suddenly we flip
yuppies,
the other
yuppies.
Way. We're yuppies.
Yeah.
It's all about us. Greed is good.
Yeah, he forgets.
Very self-focused. And now, what are we? We're poop. Poop. Pissed off old people.
Okay. Why are you pissed off, Paul?
We're pissed off because change. We're too much change too quick. We're pissed off because we feel like we're threatened, that everybody's out to take what we got. We're pissed off because we're not prepared for the next 20, 30 years to live this. There's no retirement. There's no security. We're suddenly scared for the first time in our lives. I was never scared at 20. I was never scared at 40. I'm scared at 60.
Which let that sink in for a minute. You've got over 78 million people in this country
who are scared,
that are walking around scared.
Yeah. And I think that's why they vote for Trump, or they'll go the other way and vote for Bernie. They're looking for an answer. They're scared. What happened to my job? What happened to my country? What happened to my culture? What happened to my
what happens to me?
Yeah.
Now that I'm at this point and I'm looking at down the barrel of about 20 years plus because of health and medicine developments, and what do I do?
Right.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue. Thank you, Paul, for that. I don't know that I'm ready to sign up as, you know, the word of the day is poop, but I will give you that out of respect.
Certainly
for
a lot
your
of us that feel that way. I think they're the base of the angry old white guys that change politics.
But again, anger is based in fear, and fear, now that you're describing it this way, makes a lot of sense, that why people are walking around really afraid, and we're talking about 78 million people in this country alone, and that is something that's amplified again all over the world. The advancements in medicine, quality of life, we are now in a situation where we're looking at becoming redundant more towards 60, 65, maybe 69 is the new retirement age. But the point is that you're looking at 20, 30 years, and what is society doing in terms of policy? I mean, we had guests on the show last time. It was the Hope Center for the Arts.
Right.
And then I went and I visited them. And boy, let me tell you, that was an amazingly emotional experience. If anybody is interested, go to the Rad Life on Facebook and watch the video.
Because they deal with kids that have like disabilities.
Not kids. That's the thing. It's adults. Because society has systems in place today, not at the time when Hope was started 40 years ago, but systems in place today to take care of people with intellectual disability until the age of 18.
Yeah.
And then society seemingly goes into sort of this momentary, you know, dementia and memory loss, and figures out that basically they must have already been cured at the age of 18, because these people, as they get older, do not have support services. So places like Hope Center for the Art is the only place for adults with special needs and intellectual disabilities can find support. So imagine.
Can
now,
I give you another? Maybe I don't wish to be controversial, but this is going to sound a little controversial. I know some people that had...
Well, you're poop. You're pissed off.
I'm pissed off old people. I know somebody, my wife's cousin had Down syndrome. And when his mother died, her biggest fear is that he didn't have a projected... He wasn't projected to live very long. He had already exceeded that. He was in his 40s or 50s. And now she's going to leave. She knows she's going to die. Who's going to take care of Richard? Who's going to take care of him?
And I've talked to people in senior industry and people that are basically...
Because he's not dying.
Well, I'm talking to people about that are in the care industry. And I said, you know, if you were smart, you would look at things like legacy endowments for families that are older, that have kids that are basically adults with special needs. Because who's going to take care of those kids?
Yeah.
And instead of putting up more board and cares, maybe do something that is addressing that population that is...
Well, again, because like we're all living longer, they're living longer. So whereas maybe you didn't have to project that somebody with severe disabilities would live to be 40, 50, 60 years
old. So imagine if somebody has dementia at the age of 70.
Yeah.
But then you have somebody who has intellectual disability from the age of 30.
Yeah.
Okay? If you think it's horrible that you're going to be basically facing dementia and memory loss and Alzheimer's and all the stuff and all the money that goes into that for us, right? How much – that is about 20 years of your life, maybe 30 if you're lucky, that you will basically suffer. Somebody who basically has had it from when they were a kid and then basically stopped having services that supported them at the age of 20 are looking at 50 years of basically special needs that are non-met.
Exactly.
Okay, so here's the thing. I usually don't do this early in the show, but I want to do it today. Paul, give everybody a phone number and how they can get hold of us, because I really want
It's a serious issue that we're not paying enough attention to.
This is a serious issue, and it's not the focus of the show today, but it is a serious issue. And if you're out there and you happen to be pissed off old people,
right?
Okay. call us, because I want to hear this. This is something that doesn't get said. We all walk around very civil and polite.
It became very clear to me as I'm watching the anger over Trump, as I'm watching the anger on the other side, on the left, the emerging anger that's saying, well, then socialism's the answer. If it's not fascism, it's socialism. It's something. We're
grasping at answers because there's a lot of fear in the system. And
yes,
the fear is basically very centralized. It's not only there, but centralized with people that are older, because they have realities that they are facing that they never in a million years, as conservative and
liberal or whatever.
I'm talking about conservative living style or conventional or following the rules. As much as they did that, they find themselves today in a place they never in a million years thought they were going to find themselves.
Yeah, they got okay. Only one out of ten has a retirement plan.
Well, and
most people have less than 50 grand.
And if you had a retirement plan or you didn't have a retirement plan, if you basically were vulnerable during the downturn in the economy, you just got a very escalated, e-ticket to reality.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right.
So we want the phone number. Phone number is 949-330-7761. 949-330-7761. Call us up.
We have poop.
If you're feeling pooped.
Pissed off old people waiting to answer your call.
Pooped.
But no, I want to hear from you. And I'm going to make that as an open invitation. So if you're hearing this show at any time, you pick up the phone and you call us on this thing on Wednesday. Wednesday, 12 to 1. Sound off. Oh, my God. You're really starting to sound like your old self back in the University of Michigan.
Yeah. We were angry in the 60s, mm-hmm, for different reasons.
Right.
Now we're angry for a whole difference. It's
yeah, but you see, this is what I said to you 4 years ago. I said to you, baby boomers don't know, but they will be instrumental. And if you look at the last election cycle, they were instrumental. The pissed off people about the Vietnam War, the pissed off people that basically had sit downs and shutouts, okay, those people are angry for different reasons. And they're now angry from a position of fear that isn't halfway across the planet happening, but it's happening to them right here in their own backyards.
Right.
They are vulnerable and exposed in their own backyards. And
suddenly, in many cases, we're on the other side of the barricades. We're the ones trying to hold back change. We're trying to stop change. We're afraid of change.
Okay, so with that being said, please call us if you would like to weigh in on this conversation or join us today. Or call us on other shows as well. The number is still the same. But talking about change and talking about documenting change, mm, and being in a position where you are seeing.
I love how you build these change, segues into things here.
Right? We have a gentleman on the show today that I would say has probably seen his share and more of just what we're talking about across a whole myriad of topics, especially when it comes to his involvement with politics and documenting politics. And anybody who is involved in politics or is in Orange County knows Mr. Lou Delgado, who is sitting in front of me today. Lou, welcome.
Thank you, Rod.
You, just because some people may not know this about you, didn't wake up one morning with your seasoned beard and trusty camera and show up at every rally known to man in Orange County. Okay.
Well, tell everybody.
Telling people what to do and where to stand. And you actually, hold on a second. Before Orange County, take us back to the wee Lou Delgado.
Well, just tell us what you do, and then we'll go back and retrace it. What do you do?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right. There's like about three people that don't know Lou. Okay.
I didn't know Lou.
Oh, you didn't know Lou?
I didn't know
Lou. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So what does Lou do?
Too busy being poop.
I'm pooped.
Hello. I'm Lou Delgado. I'm known as the political photographer for the Democrats in Orange County. Also these days, I'm the chief photographer for the California Democratic Party in California.
So you really are documenting the...
And by the way, if there is a version of Lou that is basically assigned to the Republican Party, please call us and come on.
There must be. I would think there would be.
No, I don't know. I'm genuinely saying, because what we're talking about is witnesses to history,
right,
that have basically documented,
yeah,
and looked through that lens so many times at things. And, what I want to do today is I want to get him from out behind the camera to share some of that stuff.
Right.
The stories and what he's seen.
So, you get a little background how I should start when I getting involved in politics.
Yes, how do you get involved in politics?
Okay, Luke? It's 1968.
68, the summer of 68, boy.
Right.
People, go look that one up, the summer of 68.
Now, there's two things were happening.
Did we lose you, Paul? Did you go back there?
Two things were happening there. There was Hubert Humphrey versus Nixon.
Yeah.
Yes.
Big deal, big deal. Campaign staffers from the Humphrey team came down to Virgil Junior High School in Vermont in Los Angeles to recruit. See if they wanted to see if you got a volunteer, you know? And I did. And
did you get a big HHH button? Hubert Horatio Humphrey?
Yeah, of course. Not only that, I got a kiss from the blonde at 6:30 in the morning before she gave me about 35 cents to go back home.
That's all it took to get into politics in those days, baby. A kiss from a blonde and you were in.
Man, and 35 cents to go home.
35 cents
to go home because the RTD ran out at 4:30. It was 15 cents before 4:30.
So why did you volunteer to help HHH and not Richard Milhouse Nixon?
That's a great question. My dad worked for Todd Shipyards. He was a union man.
Okay.
And he went on strike a couple of times, and I was the guy who had to write his letters for him. I went to...
So you grew up in a union household.
Exactly. Right. And when they stroke, I'm the one that was there with him, with my picket sign.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big deal for me. So I was a union baby.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we had great services. You know, we had Kaiser, full paid, everything. It was a great deal. And when they went on strike again, it was my honor to go to the picket line with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
How old were you?
I was 11. Maybe younger. 9, I think. 9 or 10 or something.
Can I just veer off for one quick second and ask you, because you're the... I didn't grow up in a union household. I grew up in the other end. My dad left the unions and became an executive with Chrysler Corporation. So we grew up in the other side where the unions are awful, and they're out ruining the car companies and anti-union. I listened to what Trump said the other day, and I don't know why this wasn't front page news on every union household in America. The firefighters union, whatever it's called, has been a big supporter of Biden through the years. He's built very strong union connections, as most old Democratic pals did. And so they came out and over-enthusiastically endorsed him for president. And Trump tweeted this. Those dues-sucking unions, well, that's what he called them, those dues-sucking unions won't do anything, and the working class people are on to them and won't follow their lead. And I thought to myself, he's got a lot of those union, those so-called Reagan Democrats,
right.
The first one appealed him off, those blue-collar people that were lifelong Democrats that followed the unions, and now he called out their union, and they didn't shout, they didn't fight back.
I'm sorry, wasn't it coal miners and steel workers and all those jobs that he was going to bring back?
Well, I'm
just saying...
Whether or not you think he hustled them or not, but I'm saying that he has turned those people against their own union. He called out their union. He called the union a dirty name, and in the days
but Paul, that
Lou grew up, that was fighting words.
Yeah, but the days we are in... The state of California, there's certain things, too, that you basically, like, look, everything that goes to an extreme is negative, right? So there has been abuses on different sides. I think the premise of what union support is and the fair wage and all this stuff is still getting play. I think it's, you know, to the chagrin of some others.
But you're missing my point. That's why I wanted Lou to react to. He grew up in a union household where the union was everything. And now Trump just called the biggest firefighters union.
But you're putting it all on Trump, and that's not the case, Paul.
No,
we've had it.
No, but we've never had a politician call out a union and call them dues-sucking.
The language was blatant, but other than
that... But normally that would turn off the union voters, and they would vote against him, and instead... His followers are saying, you're right, we're with you,
because
Trump,
not the
union.
Because you just described it.
They're pissed off.
Old people. And they need somebody who's going to do something. And whatever that is, we were willing to take the chance.
And how the world has changed, where the Lous of the world who grew up in union households, those union households are shrinking, not just because unions are shrinking.
Right. Okay.
But can I say something?
Yeah.
When I was growing up, the biggest unions were, you know, people who work were UAW.
Right.
The airline, the Boeing.
Yeah.
You know, they made $40 an hour.
Yeah.
Right. Now, the biggest union in the state and in the country is SEIU, and their employees make $15 an hour.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, we got a whole transformational, economic transformation.
Right, and those those unions that are quote unquote still in operation.
Right.
Are part and parcel of how that ended up transpiring.
Well, we're going through a global transformation.
Exactly.
Economically. It's basically what it is.
Exactly.
The jobs have been shipped over there, and we just have a new economy.
Well, you also have, to be fair, you also have a large percentile of drain on pensions.
Yeah.
You know, you have an aging population that no actuary probably figured out they're going to be around for as long as they are.
Clearly.
So there are things that are doing, and as usual, there's abdication of leadership that comes along, and basically people want to just kick the can down the road versus take care of something or stick their neck out and do something about it.
But I'm just shocked at the decline of that used to be the base of the Democratic Party.
I'm not shocked because I've been seeing it happen at least over the last 20 years, and I've been here since 85. And so... So I understand the nostalgic appeal of it, but to be honest, I think enough blame goes all over. The thing about it is, we start talking about things as fair wage. We talk about living wage.
Right.
We start talking about equality in pay based on gender. Things of that nature, those are accomplishable goals. When we get tied down sometimes to certain sound bites that are basically controversial, we get derailed. And people use that all the time to derail from things.
But Trump has already done things that nobody thought anybody could get away with before. He just called a major union do-sucking, and their members didn't revolt.
Well,
they went,
what?
Yeah,
that's
you're
fine.
Right,
Trump. We've covered it. We've overcovered it.
Also, I'd like to say that we've discussed old people being pissed off.
Yeah.
What about youth angst?
Well, yes.
Thank you
for that. Thank you for bringing it around. Yeah, because... You know, we have a poop guy in the corner, and he basically gets on his bandwagon every once in a while.
I'm full of poop. That's
clear. He gets on his box, but that's okay. We love him.
Yeah.
But the thing about it, I mean, it's like he's a curmudgeon. I mean, he's a friggin' curmudgeon.
I'm a classic curmudgeon.
He's a classic Irish curmudgeon.
Right.
So, but the thing is, you're right, because it is one of those weird dualities that we live in right now. It is both on the aging side, and there's also people that are caught in the crosshairs of this sort of, especially in affluent communities, that is on the younger side.
Yeah. And the proof of that was Bernie. I didn't get Bernie's appeal. Bernie appealed to my age demographic because he said, your jobs got shipped overseas, you got screwed. And so a lot of pissed off old people did like Bernie. He's an old guy like us. What he didn't expect and what I didn't expect was the number of youth that responded to his old guy message.
Well, if you were in there, and I was kind of a little bit in the trenches with that campaign, you would and I was and I've been an independent non-party affiliate forever, so it wasn't like a Democratic thing or anything.
No, you were in there.
Yeah, there was an
pitching
appeal.
Bernie when
right.
I said no.
I mean, when you have Arab Americans basically, you know, supporting a 70-year-old Jewish man from New York, you tell me if there's no appeal there. There's some friggin' charisma and magic there, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
That was
good
Lou
point.
Will tell you it was all over Al Arabia. Bernie was right up there. I mean, you know, I think you had a picture of Che on one side and you had one of Bernie on the other, right? Okay, but
really that much? Okay.
Yeah, but let's get back to this because you've seen a lot of stuff through your camera.
Mm-hmm.
You've been shooting for how long?
Well, I started shooting in the documentary field back in 1993, 94 is when I started.
Okay,
I worked on three films. The biggest was a 6-hour film on the history of country music.
Okay,
I got a chance to be befriended by Johnny Cash, Dolly Parton.
Cool.
And others. And it was my complete honor. I lived in Nashville for 3 years doing this series.
Now, you weren't...
It was on Ted Turner's TBS Superstation.
Ah, yes. I remember Turner Station.
Yeah, yeah.
You weren't born here, though.
No, I was born in Guayaquil, Ecuador.
What is that all about?
Well, my grandparents were born in Madrid. They fled to Ecuador in the early 30s.
During the Spanish Civil War.
During the Spanish Civil War.
So they fled
right.
from Franco?
Because of Franco repression. Yeah, my father was involved in politics, and so therefore that's what happened. So therefore, then my mom and my dad in Guayaquil.
Yeah,
and then my uncle.
Why Ecuador? Why did they pick Ecuador?
Oh, because actually a lot of Spaniards moved to Ecuador. Actually,
that would have escaped from Ecuador.
Yeah, huh? It was a big destination port for many Spanish people. In fact, may have been number one. Other countries were Argentina.
So were you,
and
were
Chile.
You, were you born there? Yeah.
I was born in Guayaquil.
Okay.
Right.
When did you guys move over here?
And then we moved here in 1964, March of 64. And we moved over to the Union Pico area.
How old were you when you moved?
I was here. I was 8, 9.
Okay, so you were old enough to remember.
And did you speak English?
Yeah, I remember. I remember the freeways. I remember coming from the airport. I'm going, my gosh, this is a whole new world.
And did you speak?
It's like science fiction for me.
Did
really.
You speak English when you came here, or did you have to learn a whole new?
I learned it though. I learned through immersion. I learned it in 2 months. I was able to learn. I believe in immersion, really.
And then what made you pick up the camera? Was it the Hubert Humphrey
campaign?
Oh, yeah.
I went to USC right after after graduation from high school. I went to Spears College, and then I went to USC. And I was I befriended some film students at USC Film Cinema. And they put me in all their films. One of them, Tom Neff, became my best friend in life.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun. At the awards, at the end of the semester, at the Bing Theater, they had all the films shown, you know, for the department.
Yeah.
And everybody's coming up to me, hey, oh, you're going to be an actor? Because you're good. You're good in all the films you've done. We saw all your films, you know. No, I was a business student at the time. But anyway, so...
What year was this? I did not see that one coming.
No, business. Look at his glasses. Hold his glasses up and tell me that he's a businessman. So what year was this
flower
roughly?
Power on the temples.
What year was this roughly?
This is 1977.
Okay.
1977. Oh, when the...
Same year as I was in college.
When I did the films, though, it was 1980. That's when my friend got his master's. And
man, there must be some stories about you in film in L.A.
in the 80s.
So if you were at USC, that's when, wasn't the George Lucas and Spielberg, weren't they?
No, they came earlier. They came earlier, actually. And, they set up their own.
Okay, so let's move forward because, I mean, we're going to run out of time here.
Yeah.
That's a slow story.
So anyway, so that ultimately, I went to work for Tom. And then he started a documentary channel, and I was just his top assistant, basically. And then when that ended in 99, I enrolled in a graduate program at Cal State Fullerton.
Okay.
And finished up a M.A. in political science.
Okay.
Now, when I was done with that, I said, geez, I got to go back to photography, you know. So I called up... Loretta Sanchez, Wiley Aiken at the Democratic Foundation of Orange County. Yeah. And I volunteered my time. Except I asked, you have to pay for the film. And so his executive director said, sure, come on down. And my first photo shoot was Loretta Sanchez, Linda Sanchez. They just won the congressional race together.
The sisters, the rare sisters that were served at the same time.
Sister Act it was called. And so I became the photographer of the Democratic Foundation of Orange County. That led me to Frank Barbero, rest in peace, he just passed away. And so I started working for the Democratic Party of Orange County, which led me to start working for Loretta Sanchez, and then Jose Solorio hired me,
Did you study to be a photographer?
I have taken some courses, my friend, it was a master photographer, he's had a lot of shows, he taught me a lot, and then I did take courses at all, but you can actually self-teach yourself photography, you really can.
We've had a number in here that done that.
Yeah.
You know what I find fascinating, anybody who's watching this on video, Lou is reciting all of this, and he's recalling all of this. All the time, his eyes are closed.
Yeah, well, because you got to close your eyes at this age to remember.
He's visualizing what he's talking about inside his own head.
Exactly.
I'm just pointing that out because I'm sitting here across from him, and I'm fascinated that he's doing his little Ray Charles, and he's like filtering through the archives in his head, right? Yeah. But then his eyes are closed as he projects
on
the inside of his eyelid.
We could see what he's seeing inside.
I'm telling you, I'm fascinated. I'm sitting here looking at this going, what's the show looking like inside there? Right? So that's all. I mean, give people a little taste of the kind of stuff that you have shot.
What'd you see?
Is it just rallies?
I work with Etta James, for example. That was a fascinating
Etta
photo.
James. Oh, my goodness. I love Etta James.
My only magazine coverage with her.
Really?
Etta James. She was amazing. They didn't even tell me I was shooting her.
At last.
Exactly.
They tell me I was shooting her. It was this doctor. She had lost a lot of weight. It was a Dr. Phoebe. She had this surgery thing. And so they asked me to do the photo shoot, and I didn't know who I was shooting. Okay, I show up, and I waited for 2 hours just waiting her going through makeup. And all of a sudden...
you know, hold on a second, Lou. Would you do me a favor?
Yeah.
We're
going to
end the show with At Last. Will you find it
I'll
for
find
us
that.
At some point?
Okay, at Last.
Yeah. We're going to do that. Yeah.
And so, anyway, so this woman's being transformed, and then I see a magazine on the right. You go, well, that's Etta James. Oh, that's interesting. You know, all of a sudden, then I'm starting to see her on the left. I go, Jesus, I'm working with Etta James. And that was fascinating. I loved working with her. She's a lovely woman. She took me down to her car. A Bentley.
I don't want to hear what she did, what you did in the back seat with Etta James.
No. She gave me a kiss on the cheek, and she gave me a big hug, and that was a big honor. One of the biggest honors.
That's amazing.
Including meeting Johnny Cash was really my biggest honor ever.
So you've shot all kinds of stuff.
Right.
What is some of the best ones, the stuff that you like shooting?
Well,
I mean, I know you do events, you do rallies, you do announcements, you do different things. I keep running into you on everything.
What I like to do is what
you
I'm
even
doing.
Didn't you even just shoot in the Newport Beach Film Festival?
Yes. I'm the chief photographer.
You're the chief photographer for the Newport Beach Film Festival.
Right. One of two, basically. Me and my Hermans.
That's
yeah. And this year I got sick. I only did one night, but I got a 4 photographers working under me. And so I was able to
That's
get a cover.
That's fascinating, dude.
Yeah.
I had no idea. You're a very versatile guy.
Yeah. They treat me very well. I was able to get a lot of press passes with a lot of people, and they treat me very well.
So how good to know for next year.
Yeah.
But what is it that you like shooting?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I like shooting, conventions. The event, I love shooting the convention, which I'll be doing.
That energy.
I go to the floor. I have one of my best friends is now working for Fiona Ma, one of his key assistants. But at one time, he was a union president. And he and I would just shoot, just walk to convention together. Just boom, 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 boom. And he knows everybody. Between both of us, we know everybody in California.
And listen, everybody who's listening, I'll tell you this. I know a bunch of photographers. Yeah. I know photographers that shoot fashion. I know photographers that shoot still. I know photographers that shoot portrait. People that basically even do boudoir. The thing about Lou, it's interesting, because I've seen him in action in groups of people. And it is a different reality. It's almost like a photojournalist.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, you get to capture what's going on.
If you think of a movie or something that you may have seen somewhere along the way, where somebody's just running around and just catching that shot and stuff like that, and directing and staging and all that stuff that's happening, it's so fast because there's activity taking place while this is happening. You have to command that shot. Like, you got to basically get the attention, get people to react.
Or see it and grab it.
And grab it. And see it and grab it.
Can I ask you a real quick question? Because it brings up an interesting question. Mm-hmm. You must have some iconic pictures that you took.
Yeah, what are some of the ones that are your favorites?
Well, Johnny Cash. He was sitting on the rail. He was in pain at the time. He had a broken jaw. But because he's a former recovering alcoholic, he refused to take medicine, painkillers. So he was in pain. But he still worked. He did the whole interview with us, the whole day. And then he sat outside to do the shoot, on a fence. That was very special to me, knowing what he was going through. Then afterward, he cursed me, though. He says, Lou, you did a great job organizing, because I was the one who organized that event with Johnny and June Carter Cash that day at the House of Cash in Hendersonville. And he said to me, Lou, you did a great job. Now, I want you to promise me something as you go on through life. I said, what's that, Mr. Cash? I want you to do good and be good. Oh, boy. the do good, that's not a problem.
Be good?
The be good, I'm having too much time at the night, having too much fun at the nightclubs right now. These Southern women are lovely.
Southern women love me. I can't help it. They love me.
Hold on. June Carter Cash says, Johnny, stop being mean to Lou. He did a great job today.
So you have a shot with Johnny Cash that you hold like.
Yeah.
What else? What other ones? Like, okay, give us another two or three.
If you were to put together a book,
I have a reason why.
Well, the other one would be, I guess, with Dolly Parton. She was I love an incredible woman.
Takes up two pages of the book.
She's basically the most intelligent woman I've ever met in my life. You know, she could, you know, everybody thinks she's a ditch. Yeah. Hell no. She's the most intelligent woman I've ever met, period.
She's pretty smart.
Period. Yeah. Period. And she just wowed the hell out of me. And she treated me like I was her buddy, you know. She took a great photo of me. You've probably seen it on Facebook. And she's standing on a 4-foot crate, too, by the way. She's only
she's short, yeah.
Yeah, she's very fun. Short, very short. But a lovely, lovely woman.
So politics. Yeah. Give us some political shots.
Some moments.
Well, I enjoy working with Jerry Brown. I worked with him like 6-7 times. Once in an intimate dinner for 10 people only.
What's you like to photograph?
I also enjoy working with Gavin. The guy's brilliant. He taught me a lot about Latino politics, actually.
Now, can I ask you about those two? Because I've never met either one of them. Mm-hmm. I only know them through their public persona.
Right.
Brown is very intellectual.
Oh, completely.
And seems very aloof, kind of.
Yes.
And so I wonder, is he easy to work with as a photographer? Whereas Gavin's very...
No. Jerry Brown, I know where you're going.
Yeah.
Jerry Brown is difficult to work with.
Yeah.
He's an odd duck. No question about it.
Yeah.
Once he told me, when I shook his hand at a park, he goes, "Stop sweating on me, Lou. Stop sweating on me." It was Labor Day, man. It was hot.
It was hot.
What the hell? And then, but Gavin.
He's photogenic.
He's photogenic. He's lovely. But according to, I shouldn't say this, but according to Fiona Mao, he's very aloof. You know, he doesn't like all this stuff. But to me, he's always been very nice. Again, he's taught me a lot about Latino politics. Things that
so you know where I'm going to go with this, right? Mm-hmm. Next, right?
Yeah.
Is we'll continue, but I want you to pull, okay, a set of photos.
Yeah.
Like a half a dozen to maybe 8 to 10 max.
Over
but
a span of time.
I want a span of photos that you hold
dear.
Dear.
Sure, sure.
I don't care for what reason, okay?
Well,
and I want you to basically send them to me.
That would be cool.
So I can post them.
Now, do you want the action shots or portraits?
Like? Whatever for you has meaning.
One of them will
It could be a milestone. Mm-hmm. It could be a special moment that wasn't even scripted.
Right.
It could be whatever.
It could be a little kid eating ice cream cone. Could
be
anything.
I got those. I want kids for
so whatever it is that is meaningful for
you.
I want to get inside your head to what you, because it could be you could have shot June and Johnny Cash basically all day long, and then something happened that you happened to capture, and that is in your mind momentous.
I have that photo.
So
also Freddie Fender would be another one that I really enjoy working with him, because I know his past, and he says, "Oh, my mom loves you. Oh, good, I'm gonna be in Ventura next week or 2 weeks from now. Have her come. I'll give her." A ticket. My mom didn't drive. I'm over in Nashville, and so I couldn't make that happen. But I told my mom, I wanted to go. You know, Freddie Fender.
So what are some recent shots that you've taken or things that
especially
you've captured?
Especially political, because you've been around
politics. What are some recent moments that stand out?
Recently? I did the Arab American Civic Council.
You got to sit up
fantastic.
Close. Got to sit up to the
line. Yeah. I work with the Civic American...
Arab American Civic Council. Lou shot actually our gala for the Arab American Civic Council, a nonprofit organization that I'm a chair of.
Right. And I enjoyed all the award winners. Amazing women.
Amazing
women.
We highlighted emerging women.
It's amazing. And I've become friends with all of them on Facebook, you know. And so this is why, going back to a little bit of politics, you know, Trump is so messed up regarding trying to divide us. When we got a community with all these amazing women. One of them was a rocket scientist, right?
We had a rocket scientist.
Literally.
Yes.
Literally.
A under 30, I want to say.
Yeah, probably. Gorgeous. Gorgeous, yeah. Too. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, I had to say that.
This is why Johnny Cash was pissed off at it. But no,
rocket scientists aren't supposed to be gorgeous. We had
really amazing women that we honored.
Right.
And we also honored Rima Nashashibi, who's been on the show as well, who's basically the godmother of Lou and Orange County.
Yeah, photography-wise.
And so we were very proud. I mean, this was an Arab American Civic Council event. It's a gala for celebrating Arab American Heritage Month. And this was our fourth gala, and we really felt very proud to do that. And Lou was there to capture it.
Yeah, and Lou Correa really represented.
Lou Correa was there.
Represented very well, yeah.
We got to get Lou in. We got to get Lou Correa.
I have offered. I've told Lou to come in.
Yeah. Got
to
get Lou in.
I will reach out to him.
I'll come in and take the photos when he comes in here.
That'd
let
be
me
cool.
know. I'll let you come by.
So can I – let me
– okay, so I'm announcing now that Lou Delgado is the official – photographer
for the Rad Life.
For the Rad Life. When it comes to political guests, so anybody on either side of the spectrum, you know me, I'm equal opportunity. Okay, I cannot be claimed by either party. And Lou will come take your picture.
Okay. He should follow you around like your official photographer and document the Rad Life as it unfolds.
Well, yeah,
he does enough of it. Trust me.
Here's my question: do we still? One time in my father's
phone's
era,
ringing.
Uh oh. That's the other phone.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
In my youth and in my father's life, there were iconic pictures taken that we will never forget. Little JFK saluting his dead father's coffin as it rolled by. Iwo Jima raising the flag. The soldier kissing the girl at the end of World War II. These are pictures. Che Guevara, and then later on,
well,
Che Guevara's famous picture of this ever.
We live and have always lived in a reality that is documented. I was watching a documentary series on Netflix. If anybody's interested in this topic, go see it. It's actually pretty phenomenal. Called The Roosevelts.
Yeah.
Okay? There was footage of Teddy Roosevelt,
the earliest one ever filmed.
Okay, right. So when you see things through the eye, and I've read, I think it's called, God, I'm going to get it wrong, Roosevelt Rex, I think, or Teddy
oh,
Rex.
Oh yes, right.
Right. You know what I'm talking about?
It's it's a famous autobiography.
It's autobiography of Teddy Roosevelt, and it is phenomenal. Okay, I mean, dare greatly, people, dare greatly all the time, right?
Yeah.
And you will never be as cool as Teddy Roosevelt riding on a moose. Trust me, okay?
Well, yeah.
But that's another photo.
The man in the arena who dares to get bloody.
Yeah. It's not about winning. It's about stepping up and
showing up.
And that's courage. Today, we live in a society that is so inundated with imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the meaning in the imagery is flat as a wafer.
And that's what I was getting at. So do we still have, are we immune to those iconic pictures? Or are they, because I can't think of any over the last few years.
I think we have a hard time finding them within the noise, Paul.
Yeah,
I agree. I think there's so much noise out there that the quality of something like that. Like, imagine having that funeral for JFK.
Yeah.
Okay? And basically, as much as it was televised, as much as it was documented, right, you still were paying for development of film. It wasn't basically a selfie everywhere you went.
Right.
Right? And basically, there was a range of photos that was set outside.
And somebody was
nobody,
there.
Nobody
that
staged.
Captured
nobody
it.
Staged. John.
No.
To salute.
No.
Somebody happened.
I'll
to
never
be
forget
the,
that picture.
Somebody
I'll
just
never
happened
forget that
to
image.
Be there. Okay,
salute, yeah.
To take that picture. There's the other one with them under the table in the White House.
Yes, another
okay,
iconic picture.
Another iconic picture. There's one. There's a photograph in San Clemente that's very iconic to me. As Nixon was basically
in the beach.
Well, there's one on the beach where he's walking with Pat, right? But then there's one where basically he's driving into the Casa Pacifica, and it's in the stretched limb, right? And it's
or him waving,
or him is waving as he gets on the helicopter
to leave. The last time,
right?
Yeah.
So there are iconic images, and we're not picking on one side or the other. I'm just saying there are iconic images that we used to hold dear to, and we used to anchor ourselves to in terms of whether we were there or we were not.
And I can't think of one in the last 20 years. I can't think of any iconic image that immediately pops into my head.
Well, and that's why I kind of wanted to have Lou here, because I think he provides a perspective from the other side of the lens, because he's still working. He's been doing it since 60, right?
There's also, by the way, some iconic
got to get you close to the mic there.
There's some iconic photos from Vietnam War. Remember
oh,
that?
Yeah.
Of course.
The guy being executed, shooting
that
the
one,
guy in the back
one.
Of the
well,
head.
You know,
the little kid burning.
It wasn't that long ago when we had the imagery of the guy in Tiananmen Square.
Yes, exactly.
Standing off the tank, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or Ronald Reagan's tear down that wall, and then all the people tearing down the Berlin Wall.
You know who used to do this is Life Magazine. Remember?
Life Magazine
and
used to promote those.
And we don't have those.
We don't have that. Now we have Facebook.
Well, we have time. They do a good job. They do time. But, we have National Geographic.
Time and National Geographic is buried in the noise of imagery.
Yeah, yeah.
The only iconic image I can think of, I'm struggling to come up with one in the last 20 years, isn't really a picture, but it was a photoshopped image of Obama that became that poster. That was an iconic image.
Oh, you mean you're not going to point out like Janet Jackson's, you know, fashion faux pas?
No, I'm not going to remember that.
Wardrobe malfunction. but what I'm saying is,
so what happened to iconic images?
What happened to our eye?
Yeah.
What happened to our eye?
That's
why is our eye so out of focus?
Right. Well, venues now, so many media sources, you know.
And everybody's taking a picture.
Everybody's taking a picture, right, exactly, you know.
Well, I'll tell you, I will speak for myself. I have gotten to the point of saturation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
I really have. I've gotten to a point of saturation where digesting stuff that has no substance is meaningless.
Yeah.
It's like empty calories.
Yeah, right. Pop candy.
Okay, it's like pop candy and empty calories. And we live in a world
that
basically cannot discern anymore. And it's so in the realm of convenience that we have basically killed quality.
Well,
now, I'm not saying there are not people out there that are doing it. I'm just saying that there's such a sea of noise, of cess.
From a cultural standpoint, but a lot of people focus on their own set of media, you know, and they'll still get those images. You see,
I love it when he picks up the ball.
You talk about too broadly in some way.
Well, I did it on purpose, Lou, because I wanted you focused, and you are now focused. Okay, so explain on that.
Okay.
Yes, I think you're correct. I think we now curate our own small sphere of reality.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. You know,
those family photos.
So there isn't one iconic image that we all grab.
We all have our Facebook.
Larger society, but individually, I think we do.
I think we all have our Facebook. We all tag the media that we like, you know, and we focus on our friends and the media that we like.
And I did this on purpose, by the way. Yeah. You know me well enough, right?
Yeah.
I did this on purpose. I think before, be it that we didn't have all equipment, we didn't all have the skill set, it wasn't so convenient.
It's a handful
and easy.
Of people curating.
It was a handful
this,
of people that were basically representing and curating and responsible for curating our common existence and reality.
Capturing
our history, our living history, right? And providing that for us as an anchoring that we can hold on to, whether it's our Americana or our sense of democracy or our sense of fairness or whatever it is, right? I mean, you know, you talk about pictures in El Salvador of you know, assassinations and things like that. The whole world, basically. There were few that basically were tasked with this.
Right,
okay,
right.
But there were pictures we all remembered today, wherever we were.
Today, the equivalent of the kids under the table in the White House, under JFK's table, okay, the version of that can easily be captured in every household.
Yeah, instantly every day.
Can be sent from your cell phone directly to Costco and can be sitting on a laminated, ready-to-hang piece within less than an hour.
So we've lost the ability to summarize, to capture something that we all... Not the other one that struck my mind on a
while. No, I don't think that. What I was trying to say is, I don't think that. I think we have allowed ourselves to drift in a sea of noise.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get quiet, we are still demanding quality.
The other one that's, I don't know why this didn't instantly come to my head, that we'll all remember is the 9/11 towers and Bush standing in the heat later with it forever saying, "I hear your voice." That was a powerful
The raising of the flag on the remnant of steel that was still there.
Him and the fire chief.
Yeah. No,
these are 20 years old.
But again, exactly, it's 20 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pre-Facebook.
Yeah.
That's right.
I can't think of one in the last 10 years that instantly stands out to me as an iconic, that summarized that moment, that when they're going to do the documentary of the 2010s, that we're all going to see that image and go, yes, that's what it was all about.
Well, I think...
The Kent State shooting in 68, or 70, holding the body.
Those meaningful moments will be now more... I think regionally significant. I don't think we have national moments, and that is a shame.
Tribally significant.
Because those moments, those shared moments of emotional connection, that investment of emotion, whether it is the, you know, Jesse Owens or somebody basically running in the Olympics or, you know, those moments unified us.
Yes, very much so. Absolutely.
We all had a common relationship and experience with those moments that were captured by people like Lou and documented that shared moment for us all to participate and rally around.
Right.
Okay? Those moments are not around.
No.
So it is no wonder in my mind that we have lost ground in what basically ties us together.
Amen. I never thought
in
of
a
it.
In a world that we live where it's just visual and more so every day, we have basically built our own little isolated silos in which we feel comfortable, but then the minute we basically step out, we don't know how to basically navigate the overflowing.
And in a world where everybody can now take a picture instantly on their phone, a high-quality, good image, nobody's taking good pictures.
Yeah, because it's not necessary anymore. It's about capturing the moment. Instead of actually, and I'm guilty as hell about it, but I will tell you, okay, no more. Okay? No more. Put down the friggin' phone.
Exactly what I say all the time.
Capture that moment in your mind.
Yeah.
Let me tell you one of the things that I do, if it's okay. When I'm taking a shoot of an event, oftentimes I will take one or two photos of people working their texts. You know, instead of enjoying themselves at the event, they're on the text.
Right.
Give me a break. And I said, "Poop, gotcha. Hey, you thought about coming out and joining the party?" And they laugh at me sheepishly, you know. So that's what it's at.
It's interesting that because one of the things when I adopted my daughter when she was 10 from Mexico, and I started immediately wanting to document every moment of this new life together here, and I found myself I was missing moments, and I started putting the camera down. Now, to my regret, we don't have as many pictures as I wanted to have of her, but I remember more. I wasn't fussing with trying to get the shot.
It's not only about you remembering more. It's about you also living that memory.
Yeah. And today, so run back a few years after that, she turns 18, we have a party, we take her to a club with a band, and all her friends out there, they're all 18, they're going to start to have their first drink all together. Well, they've had their drink, but I mean, my illusion is they're going to have their first drink. And what did they all do? They're texting, and they're looking at their phone rather than looking at what's on front of them on the stage. I said, put your phone down. Live it. Don't share it. Don't. You're not a photojournalist sending it to the world. You're here in this moment. You're missing it.
Well, here's part of the reason why I brought Lou on today is here's a gentleman that has, I don't even want to ask how many friggin' shoots he takes how many shots he's taken. I don't even want to put him in a spot where he has to calculate any of that. But here's a person who lives behind the camera.
Right.
A lot of time. And if he's sitting here telling you,
put it down.
Put down the camera and live your life. Find your focus from behind the viewport.
This is a lot deeper than I thought it was going to be today here.
Yeah. So, with that being said, you got our music ready?
I have the music ready.
Okay. With that being said, I appreciate everybody for being here. Thank you very much for your support for the show. We have actually a calendar full of guests already for this month and for next month. So we are fully booked for the next 2 months. If you are interested in being on this show, please contact me as soon as possible. You might have an event or something coming up and you want to highlight. Make sure you don't back yourself up against the wall, because thanks to everybody who supported the show, we are, I guess, popular. And we have people basically coming out of the woodworks asking to be on.
Yeah.
Politicians, we're going to get busy with election season like we did last time. And, you know, don't miss out. I've reached out to a couple of people, but...
don't call us a week before.
Don't call a week before. I'm telling you right now, honestly, today I have both the month of May and the month of June fully booked. And probably by the end of next week, we may be halfway through July. So don't miss out. The show's been on the air for 4 years. It has a lot of credibility and time on the ground. And if you don't believe me, then ask any of our guests that have been on here. Ask Lou.
And I'd like to thank Paul Roberts and Rod.
Thank you, Lou.
For being here. It's an honor. I enjoy
myself. Wait, hold on. He's taking over the show? We're invited to
I
be
I want to thank my mother, and I want to thank my brother.
No, please. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's it. I'm done. I just thank both of you. And
well, I thank you for actually sharing your view.
You're most welcome.
Right?
Most welcome.
Not just your
and for
eye,
your
but
years
also
of capturing what you've captured for
yeah.
all of us.
And thank you for, yeah, thank you for doing that. Because if it wasn't for people like you,
we'd miss it.
We would miss it. Because we're looking at our phone.
Yeah.
So, find your focus, people. Join us next week for another episode of The Rad Life. Thank you very much. And Paul, take us away, please.
You might be wondering.
Oh, wait, I got to get rid of the
thank you.
Yeah,
get rid of the commercial on YouTube.
One, two, there we go.
Take us away, Paul.
You got it.
I know, you're thinking, at last this show is over, but enjoy the music and find your focus, people. Find your focus.
At last, my love has come along.
There's only one Etta James, isn't there?
Okay.
Bye, everybody.